And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match starring Cynthia Hyatt. We've had amazing discussions so far. It's been an hour. It's flown by. Your trip to Uganda, all the blessings that you received and you gave, and meeting a lot of different people and really observing the culture, how different it is. And really how that creates the certain types of qualities in people, too, which is interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
As well as any culture. So I think it's good. We've started to talk about actually relationships and where do you look, inside or outside, external versus internal.
Yes.
Very important. So people out there, stop blaming people. Start looking inward. Wouldn't you say that?
Yes. Well, and I think it comes down to, still again, where is our source? And so I can look inward and get so introspective about all of my own ideas and my own pain that I become just a self-centered narcissistic person. So having my internal world in order, which means that I have to have somebody help me order it. So I can either get help externally from somebody that's mentoring me, and hopefully they're getting their truth from...
Yeah, which is very important.
Yes, because otherwise they're just going to be telling you what their opinions are. And so the idea is that we have to have a source that is greater than us.
Very, very important. And it doesn't mean, I suspect, what religion you need. I guess you could talk about it this way, is probably only one true source. So, that's probably the way to look at it.
Well, and I think the reason that it's so important, at least for my own opinion, the reason that when I look at the one true living God, that's the differentiation between other religions, is that he is a living God, which means he is relational.
Okay,
so he wants relationship with us. He isn't just some arbitrary God up there saying, this is how I want you to do it, or intervening or working in our life because they're playing games or whatever that is. He is truly a living God that is wanting relationship. And so the best place to learn relationship is from relating to him.
Which makes sense. And you want to talk a little bit about the fact, or the comment is, his ways, not your ways. Do you want to elaborate on that? Because I think that's very important. To me, it sounds like it's really getting out of your own way.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
because
yes.
If we stick to our guns and our limited beliefs and probably inappropriate behaviors at times, you don't want to come from that to try to settle something. So explain that.
Well, where this comes from is the message that I spoke on, that in varying degrees and depth, was the story of Lazarus. And if we know about Lazarus, we know that he became sick, and his sisters and friends, beseeched Jesus to come and heal him, and Jesus waited. And Lazarus died. And then Jesus rose Lazarus from the dead, from death. And so one of the things I spoke about was this passage in Isaiah, which is Isaiah 55:8, that says, his ways are not our ways and his thoughts are not our thoughts. As high as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my thoughts higher than yours and my thoughts than your thoughts. So God is saying to us, my ways aren't your ways and my thoughts are not your thoughts. It doesn't mean that he doesn't think our ways are, he's not always judging our ways or our thoughts, but he's saying, when it really comes down to really organizing the world, really healing people, really taking care of my creation, you're going to tell me how to do it. And I'm going to say to you, my ways are not your ways. So you need to then be trusting. And see, the only way I can trust God is if I have a relationship with him. And even then, it's hard for me to trust because I can't see him.
That's
so
right.
I see him through other people, and I see him manifest in different ways, and I can experience his presence. But trusting a God that is so much bigger than me, the creator of the whole entire universe, is difficult. And so he's very kind to me when he talks to me about, Cynthia, my ways aren't your ways. So as I learn in relationship with people the way I would want to do something, God many times says to me, that's not my way.
And that's the
exactly.
the clue or the cue.
Because he says, I know that person. I made that person. I know things about that person you don't know. I know needs they have that you don't understand.
And you either listen or guess what? You're going to learn the hard way.
Exactly. Exactly. And so you're going to have some disaster in your relationships. And so I'm always wanting to say, God, what is your way in this? And sometimes I argue with God because, I think I have good ideas.
You do have
I
good
really
ideas.
I really think I have good ideas. and one of the funny... thank you. I'm telling you, one of the funniest things God ever said to me, now, I'm not like, I'm not talking about, you know, delusional God speaking to me, but he certainly impresses things, and he gives us thoughts, because he says, my thoughts aren't your thoughts. And so he gives me his thoughts many times. And I was lamenting to God about all these ideas I had, right? I'm saying, God, I've got all these ideas, and they're really good ideas, and I tell people my ideas, and they like my ideas too, and I don't know how I'm going to get them all done, and I don't have enough energy, and I don't have enough time in the day. And so you know what God says to me? He says, Cynthia, the ideas that I want to get done will get done. The other ones are purely for your entertainment.
Oh, that is a good – that's a great insight, though.
Oh, my gosh. It freed me up like you wouldn't believe.
I had
peace. I was like, oh, my gosh, I can just really enjoy all my ideas and all the good things that I think I could do and that people could do and things that could happen, but really the ones that are God's way for this world or for this time. He is very good at getting them done.
That's really a good point, because I think people – seem to just scramble. I'm not talking about you, but you know, people, my clients, non-clients, people I meet, they're scrambling around. But I always told people, like, wait, figure out what your purpose is and eliminate everything else.
That's right. And see, the only one that's going to know really why he made me is him.
Yeah.
And the more that I say, you know, God, why? What is the point? Why am I here? You created me. You formed me. He says that in Psalms 139. He says, you know, I knew you before you were formed. I created you in your mother's womb. How beautifully and wonderfully made you are.
Mm.
And so God says, I knew you were a thought, and then I created you. And so he chose the day, the time, the culture, the nationality, the family that he puts me in. And he chose those. Those are his ways.
All for grand purpose, right?
He did not ask my way on these things.
Right.
So the more that I get with God's way, the more effective, the more meaningful my life is going to be. You know, the more that my life is going to be fuller, and I am going to have more contentment, because I am not striving to be what I think I should be or get the people I think I should get or change the things that I can't change.
You know, that's a really good point. The reference I use a lot is, of course, in neurolinguistic programming, there's three types of goals. And one, most people try, they want having goals. I want the house. I want the two cars. I want the, you know, the dog or whatever it is. And when they can't get having goals, which a lot of people can't, or they won't, or they don't know how, they try doing goals. Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe I got to do this to get that. But they're missing one point. I think the first goal, which I think is consistent with what you're talking about, Cynthia, is how about peace and happiness first? Because most people think they need to have something to get peace and happiness.
Or you can say, now that I'm thinking about it, you can say it's a being goal.
Exactly. That's actually how I use it.
There
give
it
me
is.
Knuckles. Right? Kurt is a witness.
Okay,
haven't
stop
I said
with,
that?
Stop being. With the bell. Okay.
Yeah.
The
bell. Yeah. She.
I got the bell.
Yeah, you got the bell. There was a TV show about the bell. But anyway, we'll talk about that later. But beingness goals, that's exactly how I've described it. And a lot of people have to realize first that a state of being of happiness and peace is not dependent on what you have or what you do.
That's right.
So doesn't that make sense? If people started to think in terms of beingness. Now, Tony Robbins, a lot of people like him, and he's been pretty innovative. However, what he said is that do you succeed to be happy or do you happily succeed?
Right.
That's what we're talking about.
Right.
What would happen if people took those type of goals, let's say in a relationship, is the goal to be peaceful and happy instead of trying to get peace and happiness from your partner?
That's right.
What would happen?
Well, and see, and I think if you take it one step farther, that the way for peace and happiness is being connected to my Creator. And so if I am connected in that way, then I automatically have meaning and purpose because I'm connected to a bigger meaning and purpose.
Yes.
And so what happens then is when things externally aren't happening right, or I feel like what's going on, or is God even here, or is he, you know, does he even see any of this? Then the more that I'm connected to that idea, that faith, okay, because sometimes faith, obviously, we don't have the feeling that goes with faith. And so, like, I can have faith in you, even if I don't always feel it. And so I have faith in who you are. So when I have faith in God, I have faith in who he says he is. So he says, I have plans that are good for you, to prosper you, not to harm you. That's Jeremiah 29:11. We love that verse. He says, for I know the plans I have for you, says the Lord. Plans to prosper you, not to harm you, for a hope and a future, for good, not for evil. So I can tell myself, you know, even if I'm not seeing it manifesting, do I have faith in who he says he is? And so that's what he says. He says in Ephesians 3:20, which is one of my favorite reference verses, he can do immeasurably more than you can ever hope for or imagine. Now, see, I can imagine a lot. So,
but not as much as God.
So when God's outside my imagination, it's always phenomenal. And so, see, the more that I have these reference points, and when I teach clients this all the time, I say, you know, I want you to have reference points that bring you back to grounding of what is true, so that when the things outside of you are destabilizing, or when this person isn't giving me what I need, or when they're not being who I want them to be, or when they're hurting me, then if my sole dependency is on that person for my contentment, my well-being, my future, my plans, that's way too much pressure on a human being, for one. They're going to fail us. And it isn't the way that God set up the hierarchy. He says, you can lean on me. I can handle that. I can be that source, and it's not hard for me.
And, you know, I think part of it is cultural, where, you know, the fairy tales of sort of relying on other people. And also, you mentioned the word prosperous, is I think also maybe people having a different meaning, maybe what God intends, of what prosperous does
Absolutely.
Mean. I when I think of that from the human condition, mm-hmm. not me personally, but I think other people think of greed, and they think mm-hmm. of that's going to be what saves them ultimately. And their survival is all about money and things, and it's the complete opposite, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
So tell us about that.
Well, the heart is, the thing is, as we talk about being internally controlled or externally controlled, the easy way is to look outside of myself and see concrete things and say, that will make me happy. Because in a lot of ways, initially, it does.
Yeah.
The problem is, it's not relational. And because humans are relational beings. If I'm not having good relationships, there isn't enough money or enough things on the planet that are going to make me happy.
And there's some great examples came to mind right now, is like Elvis Presley.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look, by most standards, people thought this guy had everything, money,
looks,
women.
Talent.
Mm-hmm. And why was he ultimately unhappy?
He was so lonely. He wasn't connected. He wasn't connected to people. He wasn't connected to God. And he had an initial connection to God.
He did?
Which kept, very much so, kept him very grounded for a very long time.
So what do you think happened?
I think the world crept in.
Oh.
Which is very hard for all of us to not let the world creep in that way. And to start to get externally focused. And you know, because the world that we live in is the one that we really see and experience first.
Yeah.
And so it takes discipline, and it takes maturity to continue to say, you know, there is a different world other than the one I'm just living in.
And really looking beyond is what you're really saying. And I guess it goes back to faith and trust that
something. And the problem is, it doesn't give us immediate gratification.
Which is a real issue, isn't
mm-hmm.
it?
Because when we get desperate, we want to feel good immediately.
Yeah.
And maturity says, I can handle having a bad feeling.
And the opposite is, give me a drink. Mm-hmm. Drugs,
right?
All sorts of addictions. It's
Which
a mask
it,
over
well,
the real.
It takes
problem.
Us back to infantile times where I wanted to feel better immediately. When we have babies crying because they need to be soothed because they don't have the capacity to do it themselves.
Mm.
So we have a caregiver that is making them feel better.
Gotcha.
Well,
That's
we're supposed
where.
To grow out of that.
And most of us don't.
We have a very difficult time because if we don't get good caregiving, which nobody has perfect parents, okay. Hopefully, the parents are doing better than the parents they had, which I believe majority of people are.
Yeah.
We still, though, don't have perfect parents because ultimately God is the perfect parent. And so if we don't transfer those nurturing dependency needs from our parents to God, then we're going to constantly be externally focused.
Makes sense. And culturally, I think that happens quite a bit. And when mm-hmm. we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. Very interesting. A key to anything in life, there's no question, not just relationships, success in business, life, sports, you name it, go internal, I'm going to say. And if you want to call in, feel free, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. We'll be right back.
Are you able to ensure the safe driving and productivity of your employees? I'm Kara Lee with GPS Heroes, and with our plug-and-play GPS device, you can set geofences, get speeding alerts, and a full report card each week with driver reports and mileage, all to your computer or handheld device. It's easy to get and easy to use, in real time, with no service contracts. Just go to gpsheroes.org/21 and order yours today. That's gpsheroes.org/21.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
and online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt, and a great discussion thus far. And we got something really good that Cynthia's going to describe to us, something that I think can relate to relationships. Mm-hmm. And let's see how people can really tune in on this one and see how it might apply to their own situation.
Yes.
So you were going to go over the death of Lazarus.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, and this was one of the things that I spoke about in Africa, and it's parallels with this: his ways are not our ways, his thoughts are not our thoughts. So when we look at the death of Lazarus, and I know that many people are familiar with this story, one of the things that we see, and I'm going to read some of these verses because it's really powerful to hear how it's sounding, okay? So if you think about Lazarus as a metaphor for a relationship, one of the things that we see is that, this man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany. And so his sister Mary and Martha, very distraught, sent word to Jesus and says, "Master, the one that you love so very much is sick." Well, that's very powerful. The one you love so very much is sick. So how many times have I felt distraught, upset, sick? Maybe I was sick mentally, sick emotionally, sick spiritually, sick physically. And people were saying to God, the one that you love Cynthia, she's sick. She's needing help. And so many times we pray for one another. We say, that person that you love, you tell me you love this person, and they're very sick. So I might, in my relationship, say about a husband, a brother, a nephew, a sister, wow, the one that you love is very sick, and we're not working out very well. So when we think of it relationally as a marriage, we're saying, God, the one you love is sick. You love our marriage, and it is sick. And so what we find here, unfortunately, Jesus got the message, and he said, the sickness is not fatal, and it will become an occasion to show more of God. Mm-hmm. So many times what we think is, this is killing me, okay? And God is saying, this isn't fatal. Now, with Lazarus, he really did die. So it seemed fatal. But what God
temporarily.
Is saying, yeah, exactly. See, when God said this isn't fatal, he says it's not permanent, okay? So we go on here, and it says, Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus, but oddly, so here's the word oddly. Well, his ways aren't our ways.
Yeah, that's right.
Oddly, when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed on to where he was for 2 more days. So I thought to myself, my gosh, how many times have you felt like Jesus waited? God is waiting. It's like there's sometimes I just go, God, do you even see what's happening? Are you even there? And so sometimes I feel like, not only is he waiting, I'm dead. I think I'm dead to him. I think he doesn't even see me anymore. He doesn't even care. It's like, wow, I need a little help down here, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, this is really painful. And I'm saying to him, when you love, you say, you love me, I'm sick, help me. And he's waiting and waiting and waiting.
So not your time, but God's
That's
time.
Right. So what we find is, wow, I'm waiting for God to come and help me. So as we go forward, we see down here it talks about one of the friends says, our friend Lazarus is falling asleep. I'm going to wake him up. This is what Jesus says. Okay, because he's saying, first of all, he says, you know, it's not fatal. Then the people come back to him and they say, you know, he's dying. And now Jesus says, oh, he's not dying. He's not dead. He's only fallen asleep. Because now they're taking it literally. Because then they come back and one of the disciples says, well, Master, if he's gone to sleep, he'll get a good rest and wake up feeling fine. Okay, how many times do we say literally to God? And God is like, okay, this is not literal. We're talking metaphorically. And we don't want to look deeper. Okay? So we go on a little ways. And then they say, well, here is Jesus saying, okay, listen, you took me literally. Let me tell you the truth. He is dead. He died. Lazarus died. And I'm glad for your sakes that I wasn't there. Ow.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. I'm like, God, that's harsh. So it's like God saying to me sometimes, you know, you're right, Cynthia, that thing is dead, and I'm glad for your sake I wasn't there. And they'd be like, I wanted you there. I wanted you there with me. I didn't want this thing to die. And so he goes on, he says, now, you know, that this is going to give you grounds for more believing. So we go down a little ways here in, you know, verse 17. It says, when Jesus finally got there, he found that Lazarus was dead for 4 days. Wow. So they're all sympathizing with Mary and Martha. And what does Martha say? Master, if you'd been here, my brother wouldn't have died. And so how many times have I said to God, you know, really, truly, you waited and you waited, and now the thing's dead. Whatever it is, the relationship, the idea, the need, the want, it's dead now. So what's the point? If you would have been here, it wouldn't have been dead. And it was probably a really good thing. I mean, Lazarus was a loved person, okay? So we go on a little farther, and we say, let's go down to verse 28. So Mary says to her sister, you know, the teacher's here and he's asking for you. Well, the moment she heard it, she jumps up, runs to him, and she says to Jesus, if you would have been here, he wouldn't have been dead. And so she's saying the same thing to him. So how many times have we said to one another about another situation, you know, if Jesus would just show up, this wouldn't be like this. And again, Jesus is saying, my ways are not your ways. So he gets to the, you know, his city. Now he's dealing with the rest of the people in the whole town. And we have here, it says, verse 33. When Jesus saw her sobbing and the Jews with her sobbing, a deep anger welled up within him. Now that's interesting. Why would God get mad if we're sobbing? Well, the impression I get here is he's frustrated because of a trust issue. He's saying, my ways aren't your ways. Don't you know who I am? See, now you're crying. You're sobbing about this. And I'm wanting you to trust me. So then, as soon as though, they say, Master, come and see what's going on. Well, as soon as Jesus really enters into relationship, then he weeps. Because then he's moved by our pain. And he weeps with us. So even though he wants us to trust him, now remember, God's relational with us. So he's feeling, we're getting our feelings from him. We're made in his image. So he's first frustrated. It's like, you know, it doesn't have to be this way. You don't have to be in this much pain. I really got this under control. I'm really taking care of things. I really have a good plan. Would you just trust me? Then he really connects with them and he goes, oh, they're hurting so bad. So he weeps with them. And so now we've got the other people saying, oh my gosh, look how deeply he's moved. He loved them. And so then we have others among them saying, well, if you loved him so much, why didn't he do something to keep him from dying?
Back to the regular ways.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, it's our ways. And they say, after all, he opened the eyes of a blind man. So not only are they being sarcastic with the Lord, they're saying, you know what? Well, if he really loved him, he would have done something about it. My gosh, he did that miracle over there.
Yeah.
Okay. So then what Jesus says is, again, he gets mad, okay, but he gets over it. And he says to them, now remove the stone. So I want you to remove the stone. Now Lazarus has been dead for 4 days, okay? So the thing that we want to look at is, there are many things in our lives and relationships or seasons in relationships where we are saying to ourselves, what needs to die in order for it to live? So something in Lazarus had to die. There was a sickness that was going on that had to die in order for him to live. And so Jesus was waiting for that thing to die. Not Lazarus, but whatever was killing Lazarus, he wanted it to die. And see, that's what's important. What is killing my relationship that needs to die? Not the relationship, but whatever it is that's killing it. Because if I don't get a handle on what's killing the relationship or the dream or the hope or the vision or whatever it is, then it will then truly be permanent.
So another way of saying that is, what are some of the obstacles?
Right.
What are some of the things that maybe you don't see that... that really are creating the situation you really don't want, but somehow you're participating in that.
Right. And so people come into my office and they say this relationship is dying. So one of the things I have to ascertain is, well, who's killing it to begin with, right? Or is there a sickness within this relationship that's killing it? And so then I start to say, well, this, and this, you keep doing these things, you're going to kill this relationship. And so it's not fatal, it's not permanent, but these things have to die. If they don't die, your relationship will die.
And what are some of those things? I mean, what comes to mind are maybe certainly certain beliefs that people have that are not conducive to a great, healthy relationship. Maybe one's purpose is too small, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe, I always said that if, if you make someone the object of your passion, that's a problem, rather than have a passion.
That's right.
And I think that's important. I think a lot of people, because of the media, and just the cultural fantasies, make people the passion or the object of their passion.
Well, and see, that's part of what's going on in this story, is that Jesus is saying, listen, you are more focused on Lazarus than you are on me. If you were more connected to me, you would understand that I know what I'm doing here.
Yeah.
And so the more that we focus on externals and we want people to make us happy, and we just go, God, please fix that person so I'm happy. Please fix. See, all those things that are going on inside of them, you got to stop that. That's killing me. And many times what God is saying is, you're doing things that are killing this relationship as well. And if you don't get a handle on those, you know, this is your part of the equation here.
And would you say, and we'll take a break in about 2 minutes, but would you say that a good place to start, I mean, obviously you get your clients after the fact, they've already connected, but wouldn't it be good, too, for people to start realizing maybe unconscious selection criteria, because they're looking through a portal, selecting people based on things that, that haven't been cleaned up. Let's put it that way.
Right,
and they're selecting the same people.
Which goes back to, I can either see the story of Lazarus as a relationship sickness, or I can say, maybe I'm also Lazarus. What is going on in my life that needs to die, that is making my life not work, whether it's people or jobs, my own spiritual, whatever it is, my health, what am I doing? What needs to die so I can really live? Because if I don't get a handle on it, then I'm going to continue to live a walking death, is what we are.
And it's what Tony Robbins said. I think it came from Einstein. He was a smart guy,
yes,
Albert Einstein.
Yes, he was.
Where he said, doing the same thing over and over again, yet expecting different results
That's
is
right.
a definition of insanity. Is that what we're talking about
here? Yes. And see, what we have to realize is that if we only go to our own self as the source, we're going to keep getting the same thing.
And why do I guess you answered the question. I was going to say, why do people do that? They go to the same source.
Right.
Because their
it's
own
easier.
Source,
well,
I should say.
And sometimes they don't even know we're doing it. See, what I do a lot of times with clients is I say, I want you to just start directing your thoughts toward God. If you can't get an organized prayer time or you don't feel like you can pray, then just start thinking toward him. So now I'm telling him my thoughts so he can say, that's not my thought, Cynthia, but I'm glad you shared it so that you can know that it's not mine. And so then sometimes I'll have thoughts and he says, you know what? You're right. That lines up with me.
Oh.
And I go, wow. And so my mind becomes more godlike.
Mm.
The more godlike my mind is, the more godlike I act.
And the more peace and harmony
there is.
That's
right. And then I spread that around everywhere I go.
I love that. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. This is like critically important in people's lives, whether you have a relationship, whether you don't. Or want one. But the truth is, the way I'm hearing it here, it's the relationship with yourself that counts most. And we'll be right back.
Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Match, No Match, starring Cynthia Hyatt. And the truth is, this is a great topic. Some of the listeners are saying, wait, where's, you know, Bachelorette number one, number two, number three, or whatever? I'm wondering.
Well, and what we're saying is they're out there if I get my internal world in order.
Absolutely.
And the more my internal world is in order, the more I am connected to my creator, the more I'm going to recognize who that person is.
And what do they say? There's a saying like, when the student's ready, the teacher appears.
Mm.
This is sort of maybe connected somehow. When you are ready, the right circumstances,
that's right,
people,
that's
opportunities appear because now you see it.
That's right.
So I think that's very important. So this is very good, and we were talking about, you know, you don't have to wait. You can start today, right now, whether you're single, whether you're in a relationship, because there is incongruence within oneself, don't you think?
Yes. And see, part of what came with this message was started with the story of Lazarus and the, you know, the paramount verse of his ways are not our ways. But as I started to study different characters in the Bible, I saw how many other people similar to me do their own way. Mm. And there were two people that really struck me that were very, very powerful. The first one was Judas, the disciple of Jesus that betrayed him for 30 pieces of silver. And then because he did, and then he got found out, when he hung himself, he committed suicide. Mm. So one of the things that's so powerful about that is that Judas did it his way. He couldn't get over himself. He made a mistake. He messed it up. He's now, how is he going to face tomorrow?
But he could have been forgiven.
Exactly. And he could have gone on to have the greatest testimony of all the other disciples. And instead, he became God in his own life. So the message to me was, I need to be very careful when I become God to myself. And when I just start determining my own outcomes, what I think I deserve, good, bad, or indifferent, when I start doing my ways, that is really serious. Judas now has an eternal problem. See, he could have fixed it when he was here on the planet. Could have gone on. We could have all been reading the book of Judas and how exciting it was that God can forgive anything. Nothing is too big for God. Nothing's too impossible. We don't shock and surprise God. We shock and surprise ourselves. But God knew this about Judas, and there was a way that God had for him if he would have let him. Then we have Peter, his other disciple, who betrayed him three times. Didn't do that, but went back to his old lifestyle. So after he betrayed Jesus that night, said the cock crows three times, you will betray me three times. And that's what Jesus said. So Peter betrays Jesus three times. Well, he's so beside himself because he hates himself now. He didn't kill himself, but he went back to his old life. He went back to being a fisherman. He just gave up and he said, well, that didn't work. My faith didn't work. So I'll just go back to being a fisherman. Well, thankfully, because he didn't kill himself, when Jesus shows back up on the planet, he fixed it with Peter. Well, Peter goes on to be the rock of the church.
That's a very
huge, huge destiny that Peter had, that because he let Jesus do it his way, he was able to fix the whole entire thing, and he goes on to fulfill his whole entire destiny, which is to be the rock of the entire Christian church.
Wow.
Yes.
That's powerful.
Yes, and so we have Jonah, right? He wants to do it his way. He's in the belly of a whale. Okay? Yeah, he gets swallowed up by a whale because he's mad that God's not doing Nineveh the way he wants. So he's in the belly of a whale for 6 days. He still comes out complaining. You know, it's astounding. It's astounding who his God's people are. It blows my mind, you know. You know, we have Moses, who did Moses' way. He had great intentions. And so he murders one of the Egyptians that was harming the Hebrews. And he was totally doing it his way in his time. And it ends up being on the backside of the desert for 40 years before he gets to fulfill his destiny.
So there's a real good, analysis there.
Yes.
And one of them I'm thinking is like, and I'll throw some of these words out and see how you would respond to them, is that so people shouldn't pout. They shouldn't settle
right.
for less.
Right.
They should, you know, maybe shorten up the time because and really listen in a different way.
Yes, and be really, and see, it goes down to when this whole idea when Jesus was upset as they're complaining about the way he's doing it, that we really want to say, God, more than anything, I need to trust you. And so I say to clients all the time, the saying I gave myself that I'm sure came from God because I would like to think I have original thoughts, but we know that's not true. They're original to me, okay?
Yes. So,
is the, you know, this idea that I either trust him or I don't. If I start doing the gray area, I get really upset because then I try to trust God, like, circumstantially.
Right.
So I have to say to myself, I either trust him or I don't, even if it doesn't seem like it makes sense. Even if it's hurting me, even if I'm frustrated, even if I'm despondent, do I trust him or not?
You know, I'm not a poker player.
Right.
And I'm not saying anyone should be. But there is a saying in poker that I think corresponds and relates to what you're saying.
Oh, good. I like to hear it.
Here we go. When you play poker, Kurt, you probably have seen it on ESPN, all in.
Mm-hmm.
Is that good? You,
that's right.
You like that one, Knuckles.
I love that. Thank you.
Are you all in
that's right.
or not? I mean,
that's
you can't
exact.
Just...
Can't do it halfway.
Yeah.
I can't trust God sometimes, because if I only trust him sometimes, then he's not worth trusting. So I either trust him or I don't.
You don't hear God say, whoops.
Exactly.
Maybe,
exactly. Sorry, made a little mistake.
Yeah, if you hear that, now you hear a human say that.
Exactly.
And you hear it a lot more than...
That's right.
Or so we should hear it
So I have to say to
more.
Myself, you know, I either trust him or I don't. So Mary and Martha... Now, they did have some good indications of still trusting Christ. They just still had their own thoughts. Because they did say, you know, Martha, I think at one point said, well, you know, if you would have been here, he would not have died. But I know that in the end, he won't die. I mean, he's going to, you know, because they were talking about he's going to live forever. And so she got the eternal thing that he'll live forever. But even then, Jesus is saying, you're still not getting my way. He's not permanently dead. And see, that was tough for them to comprehend. So they either go hyper-spiritual or they go hyper-literal. So, oh, well, he's going to live eternally, so it's okay. Or he's dead and it's permanent, you know. And so Jesus is saying, my ways are ways that you do not comprehend, and you barely get them when they're actually walking out in front of you, you know.
There's no doubt. And, you know, and for people that may understand this, may not, you know, I call it the third level of thinking, and it sort of relates. The first level, I know what I know.
Right.
I know my name is Dave, and most people play in the first level, I should say. That's the first level of thinking. The second level
is very literal.
Yeah, very literal, mm-hmm. and very limited. And the second level of thinking is I know what I don't know, meaning I have an engine in my car. If it breaks down, I don't know how to fix it, but I think someone can.
Right.
But the third level is where I always tell people, play in the third level. I know that I don't know what I don't know.
Right.
Think of it. I know.
Yes.
That I don't know what I don't know, meaning
right.
it's way beyond me.
That's right. It means there's God's
but it's
ways
out there.
That I don't even know.
So that's for the non, yes. maybe spiritual people out
that's
there.
That's exactly
like,
right.
Play in that level.
That's right.
It keeps possibilities
it
there.
It is the world of possibilities.
And anything is possible. But
that's
when
right.
you say, hey, this won't work, guess what? You just negotiated against yourself.
That's right.
It's not going to happen if you
that's
don't
right.
believe it.
That's right. And see, and that's so powerful because that really is the realm that God lives in, that want, and he really wants us there. When he says repeatedly, nothing is impossible for God. Nothing. I can do immeasurably more than you could ever hope for or imagine.
Yeah.
I am so outside of your realm yeah. that you need to trust me.
Yeah.
And so, it's tough.
So why do people, whether they're spiritual, religious, and they play in that area, or people that maybe aren't spiritual or religious, they refuse to look at the third level. What is the obstacles? Is it some type of fear of giving up yourself, maybe? Or
well, they've been hurt. They have maybe believed in something and got hurt.
Oh, so that might be it.
It's a huge issue. See, we do these little tests of faith, and if they don't follow through, then we just go and forget it.
Mm.
So I believed in your love for me to a person. He failed me. I don't believe in love anymore.
And you probably see that a lot mm-hmm. from, you know, mm-hmm. people. And they might disguise it saying, right. oh, I just want to be independent. Right. I don't need anyone.
I don't do relationships anymore.
Yeah. You probably see mm-hmm. that like a million times.
And see, it's the same thing that happens with God. That is so. And God, you know, I tell clients all the time, he takes our trust. It is so precious to him because he knows how hard it is. He knows how difficult it is for us to trust in him when we can't see him. And this is a really tough, hard world. So we get these times in our faith when we just go, I don't think I can trust this. I don't think I can believe in this. It's not working. It's not panning out. It's like everyone else is getting these promises for them. And what about me? It's not even happening. So God must not love me. He must not care about me. I must not be that important. Or I must be such a big failure. Or I must have messed up so many times that he's done with me. And we start to listen to all these thoughts that are not his thoughts. So we need to know God's thoughts, and God has good thoughts toward us. And he has loving thoughts toward us.
So, you know, there's one way to suspend judgment, and maybe that's mm-hmm. what you're really saying. There was a story about a farmer in India where he had a son, and the neighbors came by and said, uh-oh, you know, there's a war out there. They're going to come by and draft him. He was 17 years old. And they said to the farmer, you know, what a tragedy. And the farmer said, well, maybe yes, maybe no. That's all he said.
Right.
And so the next day, the son was on one of their stallions and got thrown off and broke his leg. And the neighbors came over to the farmer and said, wow, what a blessing that now your son doesn't have to go to war and get drafted. And right. The farmer said, well, maybe yes, maybe no.
Yes.
So he didn't really make
right.
a judgment. And then the next day, the stallion ran away. And the neighbors again came over and said, oh, how unfortunate that is. And the farmer said, maybe yes, maybe no. And then the next day, the stallion brings 10 more stallions back to his
yes.
farm. And the neighbor came by and said, wow, what a blessing. And the farmer said, maybe yes, maybe no. So I
yes.
guess that's the third level. It's like we
yes.
don't really know what the grand plan is. But
right.
if you have faith that everything
yes.
turns out well,
yes.
guess what?
And we have that. We have scripture for that that says, you know, that we can know that everything works together for our good. That no matter how evil things are, that God is still going to work together things for our good in spite of the evil. And so it's powerful to realize that God is not bringing evil toward us, but he knows evil is coming to us. And so he is very capable of turning even that into something good.
So, you know, so would you recommend to people listening and to other people, like when something, what you perceive good or bad happens, maybe you could say, well, maybe yes, maybe no. And to me, when I do that, it leaves it open
right.
because if I say, oh, my gosh, that's horrible, mm-hmm. I sort of create it. I sort of reinforce it. But if I say, well, maybe yes, maybe no, it leaves things open for greater good.
It does.
Is
and
that
it is,
what you
Yes, would? Very much so. And it's hard to stay connected and live in that way. And so one of the ways that we have to do cognitively and emotionally is we have to say yes, maybe no, and I still need to deal with the pain that happened right now.
Mm.
So I broke my leg. That's painful.
Yeah.
So maybe yes, maybe no. I don't know if it's a good or bad thing overall.
Right.
But in
right.
the moment, it's killing me.
Yeah, gotcha.
So I still need to address the pain yeah. of a broken leg.
Yeah.
But I'm going to try to suspend judgment as to whether overall it's a tragedy. I don't know yet.
That's right.
I don't know. What I do know is that I'm in pain, and so that's part of my faith. It says, God, you understand my pain. You also understand where this is leading. So I'm needing help with the pain I have right now so I don't misinterpret it and create my own ways and my own thoughts about my own pain.
Nicely said. This is really good. And when we come back from our break, we're going to continue our discussion with Cynthia Hyatt. This has been most remarkable. It really applies to relationships, your relationship with yourself, success, anything you want to think about. This really applies to it, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
What if your house is on fire, you call 911?
1122 to
The firemen don't know what to do. The truck's got a flat tire. The water hose has a leak. They can't decide what to wear. And everybody wants to drive the truck. This never happens because they have a process. They follow it. They're on the same page. I'll help you put your fires out with a business process. I'm Barbara Haggerty, helping you mind your own business. 602-750-4518. Increase the bottom line now. Even a two-person business needs a process, and I specialize in small business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening, but that is the topic. You need to live the way we're talking.
I know. Oh, they're hair and back. Oh, I wasn't there for a minute.
Oh, I was wondering where you went.
I was talking.
There she is.
Yes,
this is Dave Isaac with Breakthrough Thinking and the star of Match No Match.
I was like,
Cynthia,
I got cut
Hyatt.
Off.
Yeah, I was wondering. I look around. Yeah, I didn't even see you. And there, magically, you appeared,
magically.
And there you are.
There is sight,
again.
There is sound, yes.
So what we're really talking about, we could sort of summarize it. We only have maybe 8 minutes left or so. Wow, I'm pretty good at that, Kurt, right? Maybe it's the clock I'm watching. Okay,
right.
Anyway, shame on you. There was no more bells in this classroom.
That's right.
Maybe we could do a summary, because this really applies to anything and everything
yes.
one does.
Yes.
No matter what culture. It really is one truth.
And it doesn't matter what status, it doesn't matter the amount of money. It has everything to do with my own internal world and the way that that manifests in the larger world. And
yeah.
So, you know, if I am on top of my own program, per se, then my life is going to be changed profoundly instead of going external and trying to change all the external things out here so that I feel better inside.
You know, and a lot of people might say, or maybe they won't even say it, but often I'll hear people say that I just can't slow down. I got to keep going, and you know, I got the kids to take care of, and then you know, the spouse to take care of, and then I got to go to work, and then I got to play hard. You know, that always interested me when I hear, you know, work hard to play hard.
Mm-hmm.
I could never. I mean, to me, it didn't even make sense. It was almost like when someone said that. They were frantically watching the hourglass run out, and they had to play hard. Not enjoying it, but they had to play. How do you say you play hard? Tell us about that.
Well,
I was amazed when yes. I hear people say that.
Well, some of it has to do with the harder I'm working, the more I'm striving, the more into workaholism I am.
Mm.
Then the bigger the stimulus I need to overcompensate for that. So see, if I'm like striving, working, then I need to go above that to actually have an experience.
I would say...
Which really doesn't work.
It doesn't. I just say, well, just relax and enjoy. I mean, wouldn't that be nice?
Yes.
You travel.
Right. But see, once I'm on that wheel, then it's trying to get off of it. That's why you hear people that say, well, you know, I have to take at least 2 weeks off. Because the first week is me finally landing. The second week, I might actually rest.
Yeah, well, I just heard from a couple people saying they hate going on vacation because what happens is that they got to do all the stuff before the vacation to enjoy the vacation. So they're up like working 16 hours a day a week before. Then they need recovery time the first week of their vacation. And if it's only 1 week, they haven't had a vacation.
Right, right.
And so
some
it's
of that
sort
is
of weird.
Yeah, well, some of it's because we never stop. And so if we were stopping, and resting like we're supposed to. You know, the obviously the great commandment is the Sabbath. And it is a commandment that we break all the time as Americans. We break it terribly. And if God was good enough to have to rest, then we need to rest, and we don't. We haven't even taught people to rest anymore. We don't even know how to rest.
That's a good point.
And so one of the fascinating things God showed me about that little phenomenon was in the book of Genesis, the last part of chapter 1, it says, God completed his work, and his work was good. The first verse of the second chapter said, and then God entered into his rest, and it was divine. And so what we do as Americans, and here's my next book, right?
Yes.
That I'm going to talk about is this idea that we think that work is holy, work is divine, and rest is good. Actually, when God says, no, the work is good, but the rest is divine. And then, that's when we enter into holiness with God, is when we rest.
But see, that's the key. It's not sleeping your life
away.
That's
right. That's exactly right.
It's connecting as a restful place.
That's right.
And also, what I would say is that if you love what you do and you really find your purpose and you're really living it, that could be the vacation.
Absolutely.
A lot
because
of people.
Because you're doing what you are made to do.
Yeah.
Which is like breathing.
So you wouldn't need a vacation.
That's right.
But you could still rest.
Yes.
Depending how you define it.
And we'd need rest because we know, just like with any other muscle, you know, we rest our muscles. So when you have people that are marathoners, or they know that if they keep overworking a muscle, they're going to destroy it. And so
point.
What I'm saying to people emotionally, psychologically, intellectually, spiritually, if you don't rest that muscle, then you're going to get burnout.
How about this? What if we said to people, give your relationship a rest? Not a separation, but a rest.
Stop working it.
Yeah.
Oh, I say that to people many times. I say, you know what? I just don't want you to talk about anything. I just want you to be polite. I want you to be polite for 1 week.
Oh, that's okay. How does that work?
It works very well. I said, all these problems have been here for 10 years. They're not going anywhere. So can we just please stop working it, okay? It's like, you know, we're getting so much scar tissue built up here that it's going to take that much more operating and you know, when it comes to, if we were to say it in a physical way, to try to correct the problem. Because you build up so much scar tissue, you don't feel anything.
That's right. And when you said, like, working it, is that the same thing as manipulating it?
Sometimes it can be. I mean, I think that we need to work at relationships the same way as, you know, that there's a discipline that goes into maintaining and nurturing. The same way as, you know, if I plant a plant, well, there's some work involved. Now, if the work is striving and toil, that's different. But see, if I'm nurturing and caretaking something because I care about it, that's different. And so when I have relationships where people are working something, it's because I don't like the way you're doing it, and I'm not going to let it rest. And I say to them, please, let's just let it be for a time.
That makes total sense. You know,
because it doesn't mean we're ignoring it.
So right.
The only way that works is if we are agreeing to let it rest. If we just ignore it and stuff it and go into denial, that's a whole different problem.
That doesn't work
right.
at all. I did a seminar once. I can't remember the name of it, but it had to do with, it was a singles group. But we had three couples we interviewed. One, newlyweds. We had a second one married about 5 years, and or maybe 10 years. And a third one married 50 years.
Wow.
And we interviewed them to see what it was at each stage that was made it magical, made it workable, made it practical, and made it work, basically. And what was interesting, we only have 2 minutes left, so I'm going to do this real quick. And the older couple at 50 years basically said they tried to outgive each other.
Ah, that's good.
That was sort of interesting.
Yes, it is.
Wow. So try to outgive the other person, then if both sides are doing it, that could be pretty interesting.
Well, it's the same thing, you know, again, on that the videos I did on my website, one of the things I'm saying and really encouraging people is, if I am really focused on how I want that person that I just interacted with to walk away feeling that they had a positive effect, if they walk away from me injured, needing to go see another person to fix what it is that they experienced with me, see, I don't want to be that kind of person.
Yeah,
I want to be the person that is actually creating positive things in their life, even if it's just the way that I say hello.
You are remarkable. You are excellent.
You are very nice.
I am so glad that I'm here sitting with you.
Okay, and now that's
and Cynthia, how do people get in touch with you? What's your website?
CynthiaHyatt.com.
And that's easy enough.
Just
Cynthia.
My name. Yes,
but it's spelled a little different.
Yes, it is. CINTHIA.
HIETT.
And that's CynthiaHyatt.com. And how about your number? Do you ever give
your... 602-708-2015.
Well, thank you, Cynthia Hyatt. It's been remarkable. I've enjoyed this completely.
Thank you.
We'll be on again in July, and we may have a treat. That's the third Monday from 2 to 4 in July. And I hope you have a great week.
Thank you. We'll
Oh, thank you so much. This has been a blessing. And Kurt, thank you.
For
all the bells.
Always.
All the ringing. And we'll see everyone tomorrow.
Yes.